chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now, welcome to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Well, it's getting towards Halloween time again, and during that time, we always ask ourselves, we just have to, is there a real spirit world or some other worlds out there than the one that we experience day to day? And our guest, Kayla Ambrose, is known as a intuitive person, a wisdom teacher. She is someone who has seen and experienced ghosts and other paranormal things. More than that right now, though, she's the author of Ghostbusting North Carolina, and she's agreed to come talk to us, give us a little bit of information and wisdom and perspective about Halloween and ghosts and all kinds of other things that might that those people who are into spiritual things might know that some of the rest of us don't. So, Kayla, thanks so much for giving us this time.
My pleasure. Happy to be here.
Well, can we talk about your book first? Will you tell us about Ghost Hunting North Carolina?
Absolutely. The Ghost Hunting North Carolina, what I love about it is the publisher has done a program called America's Haunted Road Trip, and they're in the process of doing a book about every one of the 50 states here and the most haunted places in each state. Each year, they do three new states, and they pick an author who lives in the state. Because you're asked to spend about a year to 18 months on the road, really researching the history and traveling the state. So for me, it was the perfect trifecta of something that I love to do. I love history, first and foremost. I love to travel. And then second, I have an interest and a lifetime of experience in the supernatural or the paranormal. So when they asked me to do it, I thought, yes, this would be so much fun to do, to see everything across the state. And they had certain requirements with each book. There's a lot of books out there about haunted history of each place. But in this particular book, they wanted the chapters that I wrote to be publicly accessible so that anyone who read the book could go visit for themselves and learn about the history, but take their family and friends, put them in the car, and go see these places for themselves and see if they felt anything supernatural, felt ghosts, saw ghosts, whatever. And I thought that was such a wonderful idea. It's a way for children to learn about history in a fun way with some fun facts and to get people excited about history. And I thought if I was taught history like this in high school or in college, I might have paid a lot more attention.
So if you – I hadn't even thought of this. So that kids and children, they're interested in things that their parents sometimes have put aside and dismissed. And, for instance, I might take my grandchildren now and say, okay, let's go see this battlefield or let's go see this – very famous building. Let's go see the state capitol. And they're just about as interested in that, you know, as they would, I better not say what else would be as dull for them, but they're not interested in history. But you put a little bit of something, a little Harry Potter or a little spirit world, something that goes beyond the normal that gives them control, something beyond what their parents or grandparents might have. You get them interested. So you could get them to go see the state capitol if you talked about the ghost.
Yeah, I call myself the unofficial haunted history ambassador for North Carolina. And it's, to me, I have a lot of children that turn up at a lot of the book signings and discussions that I do because they want to know more. And, you know, you mentioned your grandchildren. I loved researching the USS North Carolina and seeing the battleship and talking about what, for many of us, our grandfathers did during Pearl Harbor and during World War II. And the North Carolina battleship has such a wonderful history of that, of showing up in Pearl Harbor right after everything happened. And it said it was filled with so much positive energy because the sailors on the shore there, they had felt so isolated and trapped after what happened at Pearl Harbor. The USS North Carolina was the first ship to arrive to Hawaii, and they said sailors and Marines just cheered for miles along the banks there. And so as well as having haunted history, there's a lot of positive energy that was reflected as well. And in my own way, I'm telling these stories of these ghosts and these memories and the spirits that were there, the spirit of the time and spirits themselves that stayed on.
Well, tell us a little bit about the, just for illustration purposes, this happens to be the first chapter in your book, is the haunting of the USS North Carolina. And although we live here in Chapel Hill, a lot of us have gone down to see that. I mean, yeah, that's a great sight to see. I've seen the battleship taking the tour, but I didn't see any ghosts.
Well, a lot of people do, including the night watchman who's been there for years to watch the ship. He's probably the one that talks about it the most. And, you know, when you have that much time in a building of any type, even a ship, that's where you're going to get most people who report things, are the ones that spend the most time in the structure.
Can you tell us his story and what he sees? And...
Absolutely. He started sleeping there on the ship, and it didn't take long before he would be woken up at night with lights blinking on and off, his television turning on and off, and hearing people walking and things clanging. And the more people started to come visit the ship again and get activity, it seems like the more that the living visit these places, the more it awakens the dead and causes them to be more active. So the longer he stayed on there and slept and the more visitors they had, the more activity picked up. Eventually it led to him seeing spirits, ghosts there walking. He would see them going about their daily activities, not really paying attention to him. Some would have tools in their hands and would be working like a wrench on, you know, to fix a pipe or something. And the kitchen seems to have a lot of activity. They're still interested in getting their lunch and dinner, and they seem to be seen there a lot in the kitchen. And what I found so interesting when I did the research for the book and all these places, I talked to such a wide variety of people. It wasn't just one person. It was a variety, from housewives and things that went on when they visited with their children, to police officers, medical personnel, people like security guards like that and night watchmen, people that said to me, honestly, they didn't even believe in ghosts before. They weren't looking for it. They didn't want it to happen. The night watchman on the battleship at first was so scared, he stopped sleeping on the ship. He would sleep in his truck parking lot there and then go do his rounds because it just unnerved him, and eventually he got more comfortable with it and realized. So, and then...
He realized that the spirits weren't going to harm him, or they realized
exactly.
That... And is it his feeling, your feeling, that these spirits are the ghost of the sailors who were killed during the war, or these are the spirits of those people who may have survived, served on the ship, may have survived, but eventually died and come back to the ship? Do we know who these spirits are?
That's a great question. And it's what every person who researches this tries to find out and identify. I guess I should start by saying there's three types of ghosts or hauntings, if you prefer. One is a straight ghost haunting. There's a ghost. It's interactive. Sometimes it'll interact with you. It interacts with the surroundings. The second is what they call a time loop haunting. And that scene, the most common example would be the Battle of Gettysburg, where the ghosts are in their uniforms from that time, and they replay an action over and over. Like you'll see there, they're acting out the Civil War battle.
Like Groundhog Day, the
yes.
movie. Yeah, there's just something that they're trapped in a loop there.
Exactly. It's almost like watching a video of them. They don't interact with you. They don't know you're there. They're in a time loop. It's where something so emotional happened that it's almost like a recording that was kept energetically. A lot of scientists think it might have to do with the magnetic energy on Earth here. Somehow it makes a recording of that very emotional imprint.
So and in then, this case, excuse me for interrupting, uh-huh. but this is very instructive. So this sort of event, or the scene that a live person might see, this is not exactly ghost or spirits. This is like a recording that is being shown in an event that's being shown. These are the pictures of the people doing this again, rather than the actual spirits reenacting it.
In a way, yes. And we really, you know, science, we're still studying this, so we don't have the perfect understanding of it yet. Don't know if we ever will. But that is a second type. And when it's that type, they don't interact with you. Versus the first type, you can speak to the ghost, and the ghost might speak back to you or engage with you.
All right, now, the second type I didn't know about, the third type.
The third type is what's called, the Germans call poltergeist. Mm. And that is where there's activity, usually in a home of some type, and usually where there's teenagers or someone going through puberty. And it has where things move. Something moves in the house, a chair moves by itself, something flies through the air, all these types of activities. But they are more related to what's called PK or TK, which is like psychokinesis or telekinesis, which really has to do more with an ability with the mind possibly to be connected and to make things move, which come through someone, and usually it's tied with a teenager going through puberty when their emotions are at a heightened level, and it seems to create some kind of psychokinesis activity.
So this is not this third type is not necessarily ghost.
This
would have to do with a special kind of power that that particular people might have to do extraordinary things that the rest of us wouldn't understand or really even believe in, but that they would have mental power that could break through that the mental constraints and make physical things happen. Is that, I mean, that's a...
And they're usually not aware of it, that they're doing it. And so people think it's a ghost or a spirit that's terrorizing the family.
Now which of these three types are do you say is going on at the battleship in Wilmington?
At the battleship, it seems like that the first and the second both are occurring. There have been, I think, five sailors that died on the ship when a Japanese torpedo hit part of the ship. And they were trapped down there. So some of the sounds that they hear with the banging on the pipes and the sounds like that sound like the ghosts of the men, a replay of that, what occurred as they met their demise there on the ship. But the second type, there seems to be another ghost who is a little more ominous. He's angry, and he interacts with people, and he really gives people this cold, deep, dark, shuddering, no-hope feeling that just crawls over them. And when he appears, no one wants to be around. And it's very different than seeing the other ghosts, like when they're in the lunchroom or doing something else. And he seems to be almost a spirit engaged in some sort of darker activity. And so it seems to be a little bit of both going on there. I wondered if, through some of the history I looked at, if he was perhaps someone who was not in their best mental capacity at the time on the ship and developed over time and then never left.
Do these spirits or ghosts try to communicate with the humans, the living people who are observing them? Is there a message that they try to get out?
I say yes. And I say that, first of all, saying that I'm an intuitive and I grew up seeing ghosts and since I was little, and also being intuitive, knowing things about people. And I was lucky that in my family it was understood, and so that I was able to talk about it. And I was raised Catholic originally, and there was a concept of guardian angels. So when I first saw things like that, I thought, oh, well, maybe that's guardian angels around me. But as I communicated more, and I talk about this in my book in the first chapter, in the introduction, I talk about the first ghost that I tried to communicate with, which was a little ghost around my brother at the time in the home we lived growing up.
Tell you what, let's take a break, Kayla Ambrose, and come back and talk a little bit more about the battleship experience and also your own personal experience. This is exciting. We're talking to Kayla Ambrose. We're doing it in the context of her new book, Ghost Hunting North Carolina, and also talking about her personal experiences in this field. And she and I'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Kayla Ambrose. She's the author of Ghost Hunting North Carolina. And not only, Kayla, this is fun for me because, you know, a lot of people, stories about ghosts and haunted places are always fun and interesting. You raise an eyebrow about people who believe in these things. But usually these books are written by authors, reporters. They're written by skeptics or really unbelievers. And you're different in the sense that you're reporting and trying to be objective about it, but when as you said before the break, you grew up seeing ghosts, and so of course you believe in them, and it puts a different perspective from the normal author who writes a book about ghosts in North Carolina, and it's interesting. So I want to talk about your own experience, but can you transfer that back to the battleship and try to put yourself in the shoes of the people who are observing and translate for us to the best you can what these spirits or ghosts on the battleship might be trying to communicate to us. What are some of the possibilities?
Absolutely. it was interesting, and that's why I was asked to write the book by the publisher, because they did want someone that maybe could talk a little more about experiences. And I write for different magazines and some newspapers online as well, Huffington Post and others. And so I did have my journalist cap on, but I did write about what I personally felt or experienced in each location. And I was very honest about it. There were some that I went to that have been reported haunted by many people, and I didn't feel anything. And so I honestly wrote that I didn't see anything and I didn't feel anything there. But at the same time, ghost-like people aren't always on demand and available. And so I'm not saying it's not haunted, but
just didn't haunt, wasn't there. You didn't find it there. It doesn't, you know, you're not disrespectful of people who might have experienced
it. Exactly. And, you know, they might not be there 24/7 just waiting for me to come knocking on their door. So I tried to give it the most clear perspective that I could in that way of what I saw and felt or didn't at each one. I did have an experience at the Battleship North Carolina.
Oh, tell us about your experience. Yeah, that's what I want to hear.
So I'm walking around and I'm, you know, the ship, it's massive. It's a lot to see. And you're up and down and looking at all these different things. And I felt something in the kitchen area and went to take a picture and looking around. It's hard to get a picture there of orbs or things like that. Ghost hunters will know what I'm talking about because there's so many shiny and reflective surfaces. Everything bounces off your camera. But I did feel something there. And I posted photos throughout the book. You can see those of pictures I took. Then I'm done. I'm touring the ship. It's nice. It's beautiful. I felt something there. Nothing too tremendous, just but I really enjoyed the history. As I'm about to leave and I'm heading up some stairs, there's something dark and shadowy that I feel looking at me. And that's the only way to describe it. It's no different than someone else staring at you. And it was that dark being that I described earlier that it's just a feeling of dread. It's angry. It's gone past the point of what I call a regular ghost, which is just the spirit of someone. This has taken on a deeper energy, and you feel the anger and the coldness, and whatever that is that's there, it's different than other ghosts. It wants to interact in not a nice way, and it doesn't really want people around or messing with it. And it gave me pause for a moment. Not many times do things like this do, because I see them often.
Are you saying you were scared? You were frightened?
I don't know if I get scared anymore because it's, you know, it's so common. But when you feel energy like that, that it's so, you know, if you picture someone really angry coming at you down the street, it gives you pause. You're like, you're nervous. What is its intention?
Kayla, do you believe that I hope that the spirit that you felt didn't harm you, but could that spirit have these kinds of spirits who are dark and angry, can they harm humans?
I think they can scare people enough to where they hurt themselves, maybe running away or something like that. I do, though, I'm a very spiritual person, and I do put a protective prayer around myself before I go looking for these types of things anywhere or doing any type of work of this nature, and ask for protection and white light to be around me, just to keep, I call it, my shield around me where nothing really can mess with us. But they can give you, it's a cold sense of fear and dread that you don't really enjoy feeling. It feels very negative. So it's not something you want to engage with. And I worry sometimes when I see the TV shows where they're trying to engage certain ghosts, and you see them yelling at them and saying, hey, you know, show me what you got, and those kind of things.
Uh-huh.
And I think, you know, we're human. We have to sleep. We have to eat. We have to rest. But ghosts have all the time in the world. And I don't think you should provoke ghosts who could follow you for the rest of your life if they wanted.
Well, how did you disengage from this dark spirit down at the battleship in Wilmington?
I raised my energy, like I call my white light energy, and just put that around me and asked for it to, that it could not be here. And I think you can do that anytime you feel anything of that nature. If you don't want to engage with the paranormal world or what you're seeing, just say a prayer like that, put energy around you and say, you cannot be here. You don't belong here. Do not come near me. And it seems to work where they won't engage with you first.
Is this a Christian prayer or universal prayer? Or are you calling on some positive aspect in the spirit world that gives you special protection?
I think it's all of the above. It's whatever your personal beliefs are, whichever that gives you the most spiritual comfort and strength, that you call upon that and ask for that protection. And it can be universal. It can be with one of the great masters. It can be with whatever is right for you. I don't think there's one right way. It's really an energy thing that you're doing where you're saying that, you know, you're you're extenuating positive energy and saying that you can't come near.
I want to pursue this a little bit. And one way to analyze this is to say that the person who has felt this negative spirit reaches deep down inside and pulls out all of his or her positive spirits, including his or her religious beliefs, as a way to counter the negativity. The other is, it's, again, a kind of Harry Potter. I've got a bigger wand than yours, or I've got a more powerful wand inside me, and I'll fight this evil spirit with my powers, my internal powers. And how do you see this? How do you see these internal powers? And it's not something you've been asked this question a lot, because your website even talks about white power. Your white power.
Well, white light.
I'm sorry. Gosh, no, I didn't mean to get
kind
there.
Kind of a universal white light, positive light.
A positive white light, which is obviously something that's very important to you and something you've thought of a lot.
I should say I'm primarily, and most of my other books are of an enlightening, empowering nature. Mm-hmm. They talk about what I teach and what I do as a wisdom teacher, and I teach the ancient philosophies from ancient Greece and Egypt and the mystery schools. And I talk about the aura, which is the energy body around us, and how to raise your aura. That's my new book, The Awakened Aura, coming out. So 90% of the time what I'm teaching about is actually empowering the living to do more with their lives. I was asked to write this book because spirit is spirit, and we have duality, just like in nature we have winter and summer, dark and light. And so, if we have angels, we have things on the other side as well. We have a duality. So I agreed to explore this because I know so many people are interested in it, and I wanted to. But with that, sharing that, I would say that most of the times that I encounter something in spirit world, it's usually of a positive nature. And ghosts aren't negative, or most of them aren't ominous. They're just ghosts trying to... Some of them don't know they died. They're stuck there. They, like you hear about the girl in the prom dress that's walking down the road that people meet, and she gets in their car and then disappears. A lot of time people have died, unfortunately, and sometimes in an instant way that they're not even aware that they're gone. They're no better or worse than any of us in human form. We meet good and bad people everywhere. But most of the time, overwhelmingly, 95% of the time, it's just ghosts like that in their ghost form that are the same people they were in their human form. It's very rare, less than 5% that people encounter something of a darker or more ominous nature. So I don't want anyone to be too afraid of that, thinking if they see a ghost that automatically they need to prepare themselves or protect themselves, that it's something bad. They're trying to communicate in a form. They're in a different form. They're in spirit form. They have to pull energy to kind of manifest, to show themselves on the earth plane. And when they do, scientists have found they need to pull electricity to do that. So they drain batteries. They're pulling energy from the air. It makes a cold spot, makes you feel cold. It'll make the TV or the lights flicker. They're not trying to be scary with it. They're just trying to pull energy in order to manifest themselves and communicate with the person that they see in front of them. So I think that's important to say that for most of the time, that's really what's going on. And that's a rare occasion. I think I wrote about maybe three where I saw something really scary, scary in that level, like the battleship and many other ones, including the one I wrote about Chapel Hill.
Let's take a break. Let's take a break and talk about Horace Williams' house. That's just where I wanted to go, but I do need to take a break. We're visiting with Kayla Ambrose, and it's about her new book, Ghost Hunting North Carolina. She's talked to us about a lot of things, but we've been in Wilmington. We're going to move to Chapel Hill after we take this short break.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. It's getting to be Halloween time. We're talking about ghosts, and we're talking with Kayla Ambrose, the author of Ghost Hunting North Carolina. And Kayla, before we took the break, we were talking in general about ghosts and spirits and the spirit world and how humans can interact, and if they don't want to interact, how they can protect themselves. It's quite interesting. And you were just getting, before I interrupted you, you were just getting ready to take us to Chapel Hill, which is where I'm most interested in. And we've heard stories about the haunting of the Horace Williams house. What was your experience when you visited Horace Williams' house, and what did you learn there?
I was so inspired when I went there, and I talked to Ernest Dahler, who's the director there, and he was able to give me so much of the wonderful history. And I encourage everyone in Chapel Hill just to learn about the history.
Absolutely.
Itself.
Thanks for that promo. I mean, you know, good night. Ernest Dahler is one of the great assets of our town and makes such a great contribution to and a stimulating contribution to us about our history. So I'm glad that somebody from out of town is reminding us of that asset. And then his office is there in the Horace Williams House. And so he showed you around a little bit.
He shared so much of the history with me, and he's a cultural treasure for the state, I agree. And it's fascinating, the plans that originally how the home was built with an octagon design and shape with Professor Hedrick there, Benjamin Hedrick. And at the time, Hedrick was a fan of phrenology, which is where you study the bumps on the head. And a lot of people were really into phrenology at the time. Thomas Edison, Horace Mann. It was a respected study in its time in the 1950s.
What did you find out by looking at these knots on your head?
Well, exactly. They would run their hands over the heads, and there was charts with the brain where you could tell, a big forehead maybe meant the person was more intelligent, and there was a complete study with it. And at the time, busts were very popular at that time coming out, so it was really fascinating for people. They wanted busts of really intelligent people like Benjamin Franklin or someone to try to look at his head and see. And so Hedrick had this interest in phrenology, which also the author who wrote a lot about that also wrote about octagon homes and how they created kind of a spiritual energy in the home and would make for good relationships within the home. And so as a scientist, he was really interested in this, and he wanted to see if he built this design, how it would, you know, affect his relationship with his wife and his work and everything. And so that's how it kind of started from there. And the last person, as we know it today, the Horace Williams House, he was such a wonderful man. And what I love is that he taught in the Socratic method, where he would ask questions and let the students answer. And he was very smart to do this. He was a philosophy professor. And Chapel Hill brought him there. But at the time, there were a lot of people who were in the state who weren't very open to philosophy. They actually considered it to be a gateway to teaching evolution, and they considered that heresy to mention evolution. So he had to be very smart and very careful about how he taught. And his students loved him so much, especially because he taught like in that form of Socrates, where instead of him just lecturing and it being his opinion, he would put the interesting questions out there and let students come to their own opinion through discussion. They loved him so much, they began to come to the house all the time. And there were reports of the house being haunted before he even passed away. His wife had died before him, and the pipes would rattle a lot, and they would hear the toilets flushing. Well, he didn't put in the bathrooms with the running toilets until she died. And so there's a lot of stories saying she came back to check them out and figured out what these newfangled things were in the home. But after he died, then they started to see an older gentleman that looked like him at the house who continues to come there this day. And if I had a wish for the Horace Williams House, because it has the most beautiful energy, I wish that UNC would start a philosophy club there and bring back that spirit there with Horace Williams and let him engage even in his ghostly form with the philosophy club students and have meetings there. I just think that would be the most amazing tradition to continue on, because it's a very happy, haunted place. And they hear other little ghost things. There's a little girl that sings in the backyard. They hear footsteps. A lot of times people walking through the house. But it's a good ghostly haunting place, and it'd be a great place to take the spirit of it and run further and make new memories there, I think.
Well, now you mentioned earlier that in some of the places that you visited, while you respected the experiences of others, it didn't work for you. How about the Horace Williams? Are you just reporting what others have experienced, or did you have a feeling?
I am. I was there very briefly for the time just to fill, and I didn't meet Horace Williams, so I'd love to. I'd love to go back again.
Well, you got to come back to Chapel Hill and stay for a while and meet Horace Williams' spirit, if he is indeed there.
I would, absolutely.
You slighted us. You stayed at that battleship and met that dark spirit. You need to come and visit our light spirit.
I was off from that over to the Carolina Inn.
Tell us about your visit at the Carolina Inn, and storyline. I've heard about the haunting there. What is the storyline about the Carolina Inn, and what did you find there?
Well, it's such a beautiful and another beautiful place in Chapel Hill that everyone should stay at. And I love to go there. I go to the high teas, and I didn't even get to put this in the book. It happened afterwards, but last time I was there for a high tea, and I felt a female ghost in the room where I was having tea, for real.
And this is one of the public rooms.
Yes.
Now you got to help us with this. How did you experience or feel the presence of this female person in a public room in the Carolina Inn?
It's no different for me than like you and I talking. If a ghost wants to come around, I see them just like I would see anyone else getting up or standing up or walking towards
me. What did it look like?
She was a young woman, that woman that I saw. And like I said, this one isn't in the book. It happened afterwards. I was just going for tea.
Is she dressed in modern clothes or in clothes of the... Yeah, of the earlier times?
She looked in clothes of an earlier time, and the things that stood out to me most is that her hair was pulled back, and she didn't fully manifest completely. She was from, say, the torso up is what I saw the most. And the bottom is a little misty, so that's usually a giveaway that you're not seeing a person.
Right. Now, you talked to us earlier about the sort of the three different kinds of observations that we might make, and what did you judge this observation of yours?
Engaging with me, as was
she
the
was,
other.
Oh, she was trying to communicate. I mean, she wanted you to see her.
She was involved, and she was happy that the tea service was going on, and she was trying to be helpful and assist the other waitresses there, assist with what was going on. She very much enjoyed it, and there's many reports of that with ghosts, that they enjoy the smell of food and alcohol and things like that, tobacco smoke, and I write about that. I actually had a ghost that haunted me while I wrote this book who would come around when I was
driving. Now, wait a minute. It was following you all over the state?
No, when I was done with all my research.
Oh, at home, when you're at home. Somebody in your own house.
He began to haunt around me, and I would feel almost like a hand on my shoulder, and it was like he was reading over me as I would ride.
Well,
and I have an idea of who I think it is, but it was so funny. My husband is very logical. He's an engineer. He's very technical, and he was walking down, came past my office, and smelled tobacco smoke coming out of the room, and we don't smoke. We never have smoke here in the house, and he's like, something's on fire. What is it? He's tearing the place apart. And he can find nothing. He finally comes back, and he's used to me being me, you know, having to be married to someone like this. He's used to it. And I said, there's a ghost with me, and he comes when I write. And it's almost like having my own ghost writer or editor who stayed with me.
And so this ghost who accompanies you, who's your sort of muse, I guess, is inspiring you maybe.
He seemed to be more of an editor. There were times when I would write some things and say, I'm not going to put that. That's going too far. And when I would have that thought, he would seem to appear and kind of encourage me, like, put it, tell the story, tell their story.
Oh, come on. Now, but getting back to the smoke, and so he's smoking as a spirit, and your husband can pick up the
smell
scent.
It. Yes, and I could too.
But that's too much. That's too much.
You know, I spent the night in the Raleigh State Capitol. A group of us investigators were allowed to stay overnight and research things, and there were over 10 of us that smelled smoke as it appeared in one of the rooms. And we had the docent there with us who confirmed the stories, and I had a ghost appear to me in the library up there who set off the alarms, even though we had security with us and they had turned off all the alarms because we were there all night investigating. And security confirmed all that we have so many reports of that, and we talked to the docent and the person that appeared, and with our descriptions we gave, they confirmed that it was Governor Zebulon Vance, who reportedly still haunts the Capitol. And interesting, Vance spent a lot of time in Chapel Hill at the Horace Williams House.
Right,
and
right.
So I write about that ghosts visit other locations. Just
so
like
you,
Mary
think of, you think Governor Vance comes over from the Capitol to the Horace Williams House from time
I
to
do.
Time.
I think he visits. And just like Mary Turk and Mordecai or Mordecai, I've heard it pronounced both ways, she goes to visit another place I wrote about, the Blount Bridgers House. That's out in East Carolina, where her family owned part of that and lived there at a time. And she's reported it at both locations. So I think they do travel.
Well, we got to take a break. We're visiting with Kayla Ambrose about her book, Ghost Hunting North Carolina. She and I'll be right back.
Chapelboro.com. Go there quick and stay a while. Chapelboro.com. More of what you live here for. And now back to Who's Talking with D.G. Martin on News Talk 1360 WCHL.
Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. It's getting to be Halloween time. And because it's Halloween time, I thought it'd be fun to talk with Kayla Alexander I don't want to do that. Kayla Ambrose, who is the author of Ghost Hunting North Carolina. And Kayla, you've taken us to two places we know pretty well and introduced us to things, beings, ghosts, spirits who are there that you're able to experience or able to get reliable reports of experiences at the Horace Williams House in Carolina Inn. But now it's getting to be Halloween time. And you would think that at Halloween time, since we're really, people are in a mode of celebrating spirits and ghosts, that it would be a time that there might be more spiritual, real spiritual activity, if it exists at all. How does someone who is comfortable in the spirit world react to what goes on at Halloween? Is this kind of like a blasphemy, or is this an exciting time for you? And what happens?
Well, I love all the holidays, and Halloween, of course, is a fun one. And there's a lot of stories that say that the veil between the spirit worlds is lighter and easier for spirits to pass than Halloween. That's where some of the stories come from. The Halloween itself is so big in the United States because of the Irish and Scottish people who migrated here and brought that with them from their Celtic history, that talked about that and how the spirits would come back to visit. And you see it in many cultures celebrated around the world. In Mexico, they have the Day of the Dead. In Europe, there's many, many types of celebrations. The Chinese have a beautiful celebration where they light candles and put them on the water and have suppers where they invite their deceased loved ones to come join them in a supper. So it's really, in a way, it can be taken any way that you choose to celebrate it spiritually. For many people, it's a time to remember our loved ones and to know that they're not that far away. And ghosts, in their way, sometimes are here to kind of remind us of that life does go on. This is not the end. And scientists are trying to figure out maybe what does keep those planes separated, and can we visit them and they visit us more often. So I like Halloween in that sense, to talk about that and to share it. And of course, for many other people, it's fun too, just to dress up and get out of your character and have something different and be something that you want to be like when you're a child. It's very fun.
So someone who's in touch with the spiritual world is not offended by the lighthearted way and skeptical way in which many of the rest of us treat Halloween, as sort of not a joking reference to the a disrespectful reference to the spirits. That doesn't bother you at all?
No, I think, you know, the first thing, I think if you are a spiritual person, you have to have a sense of humor.
Ah,
and
good.
So you have to have fun and, you know, lightness and brevity and things. It's part of life. And my biggest philosophy is many paths, one destination. And what I mean by that is, when we were all in school learning, we were different personalities, and we learn in different ways. One of us had to write things over and over. Another had to listen to the lecture. Another person read a book. And some, like me, were staring out the window, but our minds were open, and we were picking up the information. There's no one right way. All of us were learning in the way that's right for us. And I think for religion, it's the same way. There are different religions for different personalities and people to understand themselves spiritually and the message that's right for them. And I call that many paths. There's just different ways for us to learn. The one destination is, I think, really everyone is seeking to understand the divine, whatever they would like to speak of as the divine, to understand that and have a relationship with it, and to understand themselves along the way as well on a deeper level. So to me, it's many paths, one destination. I don't judge anyone else's path. I try to have respect for all paths and understanding. And I think it's fun to laugh and have fun at things, too. And I certainly love to. And I throw Halloween parties and have a good time with it. And I think it's a wonderful time of year in so many different ways. And it's just important to be open, have an open mind. I'm not trying to convince anyone. I state, you know, from my experiences, I was just at a lecture at a library where a lady told me that she didn't believe in reincarnation or ghosts or any of these things, and stated her beliefs, but then told me that her son had committed suicide, and he had come back to see her, and she knew it was him, even though her church and her beliefs told her that couldn't happen. And as she was there, I was seeing her son standing behind her. And
you could see his
son. I could. And I told her, I said, I have a message for you if you want it. And she said, well, I just told you his name and that he died, so of course you know. And I said, well, that's not his message. And I proceeded to give her a name that wasn't her son's name. And I said, this person's name is his best friend that is still living, and he's worried about him. He feels he doesn't have a mother influence, and he wants to know if you will go be a mother to this boy and watch over him. And she grabbed her best friend's arm, and this is a big talk I'm giving people everywhere, and she said, she's right. That was his best.
Well, we've just got time, I guess, for one more little snippet. And that is the thing that interests me is all of these talks of spirits and ghosts and the surviving spirits of people who are long dead, this contradicts the major tenets of most Christian religions, and I guess Judaism and probably Islam as well. But are you comfortable are people who are deeply religious also comfortable with your type of view of the spirit and the spirit world?
Well, some are and some aren't. It really depends, you know, on the person and where they are. A lot of them like to talk to me about it. I've studied theology.
And you were raised Catholic. You studied theology. I mean, are you just tolerant of everything and not too particular about your own religion? Are you not tied into a traditional religion then?
Well, I am a reverend, actually, of a church that is not non-denominational. And I do teach about it. I like to teach about religion. I find it fascinating and spirituality.
Would you consider yourself then a traditional Christian who also believes in the spirit world? Would that be appropriate, or that's too strong?
I would say not traditional. Maybe Gnostic.
Gnostic.
Would be the closest.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Golly, now we got a whole new program, and it's time to quit talking. But yeah, you say Gnostic, and I want to keep on going. This has just been wonderful, Kayla. Kayla Ambrose is the author of Ghost Hunting North Carolina, and she's given us an hour to talk about our ghost here in Chapel Hill and spirits and given us a whole new perspective. And I really thank you for sharing that time with us.
It's my pleasure. And Chapel Hill is so wonderful and full of so many wonderful ghosts and haunted stories. And I hope to come back again soon and investigate more.
We hope you'll come back real soon. Thanks to Kayla Ambrose. And thanks to all y'all for listening. It's been Who's Talking. We'll be right back here real soon.